Hi there, welcome to Victim to Victor, the podcast dedicated to empowering abuse survivors and inspiring healing, hope, and positive change. I'm Anu Verma, a published author, and in every episode, I'll sit down with a guest and embark on an insightful conversation about trauma, as well as practical strategies to start the healing process. So let's get started. I hope you enjoy the show. With me today, I have Jasmine Anderson, who's a psychic medium and energy medicine practitioner from Glasgow, Scotland. Jasmine has suffered from sexual assault and toxic relationships, who now helps survivors to heal their pain around childhood, sex, and toxic relationship, whilst navigating the spiritual awakening. Welcome to the Victim to Victor podcast show, Jasmine Anderson. How are you?
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. And I know we've been waiting to have you on. It's been a few obstacles to overcome, but I'm so glad that you're finally on. And you're calling all the way from Glasgow up north, right?
Yep.
Oh, fantastic. So I'll just kind of explain to my listeners, as you might have already heard in the introduction, Jasmine is here to share her story of survival. She's gone through a few obstacles, a few challenging obstacles. And, I'm really proud of Jasmine that she's come to where she is today. She survived and she's here now to inspire everyone and to tell a story. So it'd be great, Jasmine, for you to start off just to give my listeners an insight about your life and who you are, where you're from, and, you know, anything that's happened to you.
Okay, so my name's Jasmine. I am a psychic medium and a spiritual mentor. I also work with various energy healing modalities, such as Reiki and Seikem. But my story probably begins back in 2006 when I'd moved to Glasgow. I was living in the city centre, just outside of it, and it was my first ever attempt at living on my own. I was feeling very I felt like I had got it all sussed. I was only 18, so this was like my first ever place to stay. I was an art student at the time, and I was living in this little place that was really cheap in the East End. And while I had been staying there, it wasn't like the best area, to be honest with you. It attracted like a lot of different walks of life who were kind of looking for cheap rent. And there was like a lot of antisocial behaviour, that kind of thing. So I was living in this, it was like an old tenement, and across the landing from me were these Russian neighbours, and they were all living together in this tiny little flat. And I wouldn't say we'd struck up a friendship or anything, but we spoke to each other on the way past, just like, hi, how you doing, that kind of thing. And I would say for the first couple of months, like, that was all that had ever happened. You know, it was saying hello, walking past on the stairs. If I was coming home shopping, they would sometimes help me with the bags upstairs. And one night I came in from work. It was actually it was just before Beltane. So that was like the 1st of May. It was 30th of April. So I was working the next day, so I didn't have anything planned. So I remember I was kind of like just chilling out in the bath, and the door had went, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to answer that. But it was quite persistent, and I thought, right, okay. So I was like, give me a minute. Kind of covered myself up, hid well behind the door, with the door kind of partially closed, and they were like, it's your neighbour, we're having a party, we'd like to invite you to get to know you better, all your neighbours are going to be here. And I was like, okay. And I said, okay, I'll maybe come for a couple of hours. And I said, I'll be about an hour to give myself time and get ready and stuff like that. And so I kind of got myself ready. I was a little bit excited because I was so new to this living alone experience. It had been a little bit lonely. And I didn't have a flatmate or anything, so I wanted to have like a good relationship with my neighbours. So I went to this party and I found that it wasn't all my neighbours in the building. It was just this group of Russians. And it was mainly men that were there, but there was a female there. And she struck up a friendship with me. That night, she never really left my side. There was another man who was with her who never really left my side either. So I was there for a couple of hours. There was food. There was drink outside. Had a couple of drinks. There was like a lot of translation going on because there was a lot of broken English. And when the sun started to go down, we moved the party inside. I was having a really good time. And then as things kind of moved onwards, I had been chatting to like another couple of these men, and the female had disappeared. And I noticed when she came back into the room, she was crying. She had been arguing with another man. And I was a little bit concerned. I was like, she okay? And she said that she was leaving, but she was leaving me with the other man that we'd been speaking to that night, and that he would take care of me, he would look after me. I mean, my flat was like directly opposite there, so I didn't really have any worries about getting home or anything. So she had left, and this guy she'd been arguing with was sitting in the corner of the room, and he was kind of like just very kind of moody, kind of like staring intently, really not a comfortable feeling to be around. And as I had been speaking to like these other men, like he had pulled me onto his knee, and I immediately was like, no, I'm not having that. And I thought it's time for me to go home. So I kind of like got off his knee and I was walking to the door. So he went ahead of me to kind of let me out the building. Sorry, let me out their flat. But I didn't make it to the front door. He kind of like dragged me into the room right next to it, threw me down in the bed. And that is obviously when he raped me. During that rape, there was like an interruption. And while that was kind of happening, it was like I had been screaming, there was music on, but I don't know if they heard me or not. I imagine that they would have heard me. But another man came in and he had got off me briefly they were having like some kind of argument. It was like a heated conversation. And while I'd kind of been lying there, I kind of got myself up, and it feels as if like there was like all this time that stood still. And that was when I made like the decision just to like run, just run out the door, run into my own place. I forgot to mention actually that while I'd been there, like I had let a friend know where I was going. This friend was actually like my ex-partner, and I would say that like our relationship had ended, but it didn't feel like it had ended. There was still like some, there were still some feelings there. And I'd mentioned that I was going there that night, and he had phoned me earlier to check in with me just to check I was safe. And it was like, cool, you're safe at that point. But I had been wearing this little drawstring bag, and I had like a really long strap on it. And that had been round it was still kind of round my neck while all this was happening. And there was a few occasions where this man had been on top of me that I had managed to get a hand free. And I was trying to kind of like, while this was all happening, I was trying to kind of like work it up into the bag to kind of like see if I could get the phone to unlock. It was one of those really old phones that didn't unlock all the time. But I had actually managed to press the call button and I'd called the last person who had phoned me, which was my ex. So he had actually heard some of this going on and he'd actually already phoned the police. So I had gotten...
Oh, no, I'm just thinking, like, to hear that, to hear someone who you care for getting raped, that must have been quite difficult for him.
Yeah, it was like... I don't know how he knew. Like, I can't really remember, like, how he knew what was going on, but he obviously heard, like, a struggle.
Yeah, you know, that's okay.
I think, like, later on he'd said that there was something that I'd been shouting that he it kind of triggered for him, that this was what was going on. And obviously I got back to my flat once I'd run out and things, and then the police had showed up.
Brilliant. That was good.
So that was, you know, I did get away. He didn't get to finish off, you know, what he was doing or anything like that.
So you're in the whole process. I mean, I'm so sorry that you had to go through that at such a young age. But you're in the whole process because there's a thing called freeze and flight response. Mm-hmm. Would you say that you froze during that time?
Yeah, definitely. Because like when I went over it a lot in my head afterwards and I was like, okay, how could I have got my hand free to like press a button on my phone, but I couldn't have, could I not have like put all my strength to getting him off of him, like why didn't I scratch him, why did I scratch him, like I couldn't really kind of work out why it had continued and why like I didn't fight harder enough and things like that. And I do remember like when I remember this, I'm always like remembering it outside my body, looking at myself.
Okay.
And it's one of those ones where it's like watching a movie clip that you're someone else, but there's never any sound, which is really weird.
Yeah.
It's like a silent film that I'm watching.
It is strange. Yeah, it's like an out-of-body experience because, again, you know, this is what trauma is when you're in a traumatic episode. That's quite normal where you just kind of step out of your body and then it's just your physical form really that just kind of gives in, because I suppose he was obviously quite bigger than you during the, that's what I mean. It's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult to actually manhandle an actual bigger man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, would you say as well, just looking back and, you know, straight after the event, was there any like self-blame going on?
Definitely.
Really?
Okay. I kind of blamed myself. Like, it was, I had several different trains of thought. One thought was, how could I be so stupid? Like, how could I be so naive? Like, it was a male dominated party. Like, how could you not realize? And I think, like, I do remember, like, before leaving for the party, like part of me didn't want to go. Like part of me didn't want to kind of answer the door that night.
Right.
But the other part of me wanted connection with people.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a little bit of that, and there was shame put on me like from other people as well, that made me feel that, you know, it was my fault, that I should have taken better care of myself, you know. And we know that like This is stuff that people say to victims all the time when it comes to rape and sexual assault.
It's sad. It is sad. Absolutely.
What could you have done better?
Yeah.
Rather than that person's actions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called secondary victimization, where we're a victim anyway, and then suddenly we're getting all this blame, and then it just makes us feel even worse. And it's no wonder that so many survivors, they, you know, go through so many mental health issues. I mean, did it impact you? Because I know that, you know, you did struggle with trauma, post-traumatic stress disorder later on in life.
So it did. Like, I remember, like, immediately I had to, like, I went to live with my ex for like a month or two. And I remember for like the first week or two, I was like a shell. I was just a shell. Like, I didn't cry about it or anything, but I just lay there on the couch and I was quiet. And, you know, we didn't have things like smart TVs or anything like that. And only some people had kind of Sky, you know, that kind of thing. So I remember like watching, I think it was like 24 or something like that, or CSI and things like that, and like remembering like, oh, we watched that last week and it's on again. Right. That whole week's passed. Okay.
Wow.
And that was like my indication of like time. I had no idea what day I was on. I had no idea what time it was. I was just like, oh, this is always on a Sunday.
Wow.
And it's Sunday again. So that was how I kind of orientated myself for the first couple of weeks, was what was on the TV, or if someone had said something to me, like, because I had no concept of time or space or anything like that, and just felt very introverted, jumped at the slightest noise, like the door going, the phone going, just feeling extreme panic and unsettled, and just like if I left the house, like, and like someone was walking behind me or someone came walking alongside me, like I would literally jump. I was really, really kind of scared of everything. And then there was this other side of me that was trying to numb out and trying to numb what I was feeling. So there was like a lot of alcohol, there was a lot of spending like money that I didn't have. Just going along like high street shops and like going in, and like it was every other week trying to buy myself like a new wardrobe to kind of fix how I was feeling, to try and change how I looked. And it wasn't the outside of me that was the problem.
Exactly. The inside, you were traumatized. You were suffering. I mean, I don't want to spend too long on the perpetrator, but what happened with him? Did he get arrested on that night?
He was arrested right away, and he was taken into custody. I had to do an ID parade a couple of days afterwards. I had to identify him, and I did. The thing that kind of stood out for me was how dark his eyes were. They really were like these black holes.
Wow.
Evil. And evil. Really evil looking. And like, I just knew, like, as soon as it was like, there was a process to go through. You have to see them all before you say who it is. And like, I saw them all and I was like, it's number three. It's number three. Like, and they were like, you need to wait and stuff. And you need to kind of like see them all first. But yeah, and it was like, I remember those eyes on me that night, and just, well, I do remember while it was happening, thinking, if I don't get away, he's going to kill me. Like, he was so strong.
Goodness. And then, obviously, you pressed charges.
Yeah, it was kind of all, it felt like it was all taken out of my hands, really. Like, that was the automatic thing that happened, was I do believe he was charged, from what I remember, because he was on remand in prison after that.
Wow.
And awaiting like a court sentence. We did get a date through for court. And then just as soon as like we kind of got the date for court and kind of like we had like a meeting with the what do you call them? Procurator fiscal. Am I saying it right? That place. That place. Where we had to go through my statement and if there was anything that I'd missed from my original statement, it was kind of going over everything with a fine tooth comb. They interviewed my ex. He was like a potential witness, basically. And there was obviously the, like all the kind of medical testing that came alongside all that. And as soon as we got the date for court, shortly afterwards it was thrown out of court, and we got a letter to say that he was being deported.
Russia. Yeah.
But no idea if he actually was.
Oh, no idea.
Like where he is now.
No. Okay. Well, let's just hope he didn't go on to affect any of the innocent ladies' lives. So what happened to you then from then on? How was your life impacted?
It was majorly impacted in a sense that I couldn't really progress on with anything.
Okay.
Like I didn't really have like a plan. I don't think many people do at 18.
Right.
I was at college. I was an art student. I was progressing into maybe like fashion. I had thought about going to fashion school for a little bit. I had planned to work loads and things like that and just see where things took me. But having this happen upturned my entire life, because I soon found that I wasn't able to go to college because of the anxiety, because of the flashbacks, because of how anxious I was. So I was missing time at college and things like that. I managed to get into a fashion course, but it lasted like a couple of months as I kind of started turning night into day into night. I was out partying because I was trying to numb what I was going through. I ended up in a relationship not long afterwards with someone who was really sweet, who was very caring and understanding, and I destroyed that relationship from the inside out because I was so scared to be alone. And so, like, whenever he stayed over and he would leave to go to work in the morning, like, I couldn't deal with that separation. Like, please don't leave me alone. Like, and I would hurt myself to try and stop him from going to work, because it was like I felt so scared, but I couldn't tell you exactly what I was scared of. And so, like, I destroyed that relationship because I became someone who was very hard work to be with.
That's understandable. You know? That is understandable. Yeah. I can totally relate. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's just because what happens obviously in rape, sexual abuse, domestic violence, it's our power that gets taken away from us. So
yeah.
We're kind of left powerless and vulnerable, even more vulnerable. I mean, you know, at the age of 18, girls in particular, we're quite innocent and vulnerable anyway, but then you know, if we're getting abused as well, then it just doubles that impact. So yeah. I just feel that, yeah, it's normal. It's normal to feel like this. So yeah, then what happened after that? Did you manage to end the relationship?
It was one of those ones. I ended it because I was wanting them to say, no, stay.
Yeah.
No, like, and it, you know, when I said, you know, I think we should break up because I don't feel like your heart and soul's in this relationship. And I think he was like, oh, thank God. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was so difficult to be with. And, you know, I was like, it was one of those ones that was like, I knew he was trying to get out of it. But at the same time, like, I was like, why did I have to open my mouth? But I was just needing somebody to be with me through, you know. And I don't think he really understood the whole dynamics of how I was traumatized. I mean, he knew about this, but I don't think he really understood that I was struggling with trauma and PTSD. I don't think he got that. And to be honest, like, I can't really expect someone to get that. But
And even like, you know, when it's just happened and at that age as well, yeah, you don't fully understand it. Absolutely.
I didn't even understand it. No. I just thought, like, I don't really know what I was thinking, but I had a really intense friendship after that, which, you know, I'm still friends with this person to this day. I still absolutely love and adore them. We don't really hang out so much because when we do, we're very, this was someone who was, you know, had similar life experience to me, who was going through similar pain, who was kind of drinking all the time to blot out their own pain and using drugs as well. And so when we kind of like found each other, it was like a ride or die type of friendship. So it was amazing. But like, one of us would pull the other person down and stay there. Do you know what I mean? So I couldn't really, like, as like I began to heal, like I realized I couldn't really have the kind of relationship that I had with this person, and I had to put a bit of distance between us. Unfortunately, and we're still friends to this day, but we don't hang out because, you know, it would go back into these kind of old patterns and behaviors.
Absolutely, yeah. It's you know, sometimes we have these like trauma bonds with people as well. Yeah. You know, they can be quite unhealthy bonds.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, but you know, at the time, he was there to help you. It was kind of survival, like you said. Mm-hmm. And absolutely, it takes a lot of inner work to kind of break those ties and to find people who are there, who are going to support you and, you know, help you to flourish. So what happened? Did you seek therapy later on in your life?
I kind of started having therapy when I was about, I think I was 19 when I started therapy, and that was kind of like CBT. Mm-hmm. And I kind of stayed in therapy like a long time because I didn't feel safe out of it.
Fantastic. That's good. And that, again, you know, it's your support. You're obviously learning a lot about what happened and learning a lot about yourself and gaining some inner awareness. Yeah. So how many years were you in therapy?
I was in therapy from when I was 19 until I was about 26. I would say 26, and then I had a little break. Yeah. And then I went back into therapy briefly again. Mm.
Was there another trigger for that?
Basically, yeah. What had happened was when I, like, after this has happened, I went into like another line of work. Basically, I became a dominatrix.
Lovely.
That was great, because I did. I wanted to feel in control. There wasn't any sex involved or nudity on my part or anything like that. It was just BDSM and role play, and it allowed me to be that confident woman that I wanted to be, the one that was in control, the one that called all the shots. And so while I was in this line of work, like, I met another man who came to see me for a little while, and then we developed a relationship afterwards. It turned out further down the line that he was married, and I decided that I would keep on with that relationship because it felt safe.
Yeah, understandable. Absolutely.
Because he wasn't mine. So technically he could never leave me.
Yeah, okay.
Technically he couldn't reject me. And then I, like, he was more understanding of everything that I was going through. Like, he just got it. And that was a really intense relationship as well, like really intense. And I needed the therapy to break up with him.
Oh, bless.
To let him go eventually. You know, I needed the intense therapy to let him go, because this was another unhealthy
trauma bond.
Yeah, it was another trauma bond, and I had to let that go. And I really, really struggled with it. It took me 7 years to leave that behind.
Wow. And was he older than you?
He was older than me. Yeah. So I, what age was it? I met him when I was just before I turned 20.
Okay.
And he was in his late 30s.
Right, okay. So I guess it's that maturity, you know, stability, somebody who, you know, obviously, yeah, like you said, could understand you at that time. That's understandable, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And then so you managed to break that off.
Yeah.
Healthily, safely. Yeah. That's good. Okay. Yeah. Brilliant. And so something which you didn't mention was kind of when you were younger and, you know, the fact you were brought up by your gran, so there was a lot of neglect.
Yeah, there was. Like I wouldn't say like my childhood was mostly walking on eggshells is probably the best way I could describe it. I had a mother that was quite cold, very emotionally cold, and would kind of shame me and blame me for things and things like that. So, like, if it was little things like if you looked at her the wrong way, or if you dropped a fork at the table, or if you expressed any kind of anger, upset about anything, it was like, well, get your coat, your bags are packed, so I'm taking you to the orphanage kind of like upbringing. So my mum had met another partner when I was around 9 or 10. We didn't get on. So I then kind of chose to go stay with my dad, didn't get on with his partner. And so, like, I was left with my gran, and she raised me, but she was quite emotionally cold as well. And there was quite tight parameters of control there as well. So while other kids were out playing and kind of going places with their friends, I was kind of stuck in all the time, because it was like, I'm your only friend. Like, you can't trust anybody else. So, yeah, there was, like, a lot of that grown up. And I recently had therapy in the past year to deal with the relationship with my mother, you know, because that was like a relationship that I really, really struggled with, unfortunately, throughout my life. And she would come into my life and disappear for a while, and come back again. And I had to deal with that as well, because it wasn't a healthy relationship. So that
fantastic. So how's it been reuniting with your mum?
We reunited originally, and that kind of happened after I had my daughter. We tried really hard to make the relationship work. And then I had my son, and she had asked that, you know, I move closer to her so she could help out more and things like that. But after I moved, she didn't really want to do that. And so there was like a lot of distance, there was like a lot of mind games. And it was that rejection all over again. And she started kind of distancing herself from me, then coming back into my life, coming back out of it. And I had to go through therapy to learn to establish boundaries with her. And she didn't like my boundaries. So
interesting. That relationship
is now over. Which for the best, it's honestly for the best, and I wish her well and things like that, but it's just not, was not a healthy dynamic for us.
At least you tried.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. No, I'm really glad that, you know, you've kind of understood a lot more about that relationship, because sometimes, yeah, again, that can really impact us as we get older. And especially, you know, when you are neglected or emotionally abused as a child, it does impact us, and it impacts our choice of partners, you know, our choice of relationships, yeah, that we enter. I mean, do you feel that it definitely had an impact with you, and just the fact, yeah, that you were craving some love?
Yeah,
and
like my first relationship, like, was when I was 15, and it was with an older man.
Okay.
So there's like a whole thing about statutory rape there, and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. Mm. And I went into this age of 15, lost my virginity and things to an older man, and the adults in my life were just like, all right, cool. They weren't really kind of, they weren't really interested in kind of what I was doing, but I was really looking for that love and validation for someone, and that relationship turned horrifically violent. You know, I was coming home at the weekend,
boy,
with bruises on my face, on my arms, and like, I was like, oh, what'd you do? And I was like, oh, I walked into the door. There was no, if that happened to my daughter, I tell you, I would hunt down the person.
Absolutely. And yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
they wouldn't love to see another day, but there was no protection. There was no, there was no kind of care or concern. And I went to the next relationship, the next one with older men.
Right.
I really couldn't give me the love that I was looking for.
Not at all. And I suppose you were attracting the wrong partners, these abusers. Yeah. So it kind of makes sense. I mean, again, you know, you missed that out, because I think that's a significant part of your life as well. You know, the fact that you were a survivor of domestic abuse from the age of 15.
Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah.
And I was reading, like, I've done like a lot of studying around this, because like, okay, a lot of my clients are women who come to me usually for readings or kind of coaching sessions, who are in domestic violence relationships or can't let go of that partner, and, you know, like, have to kind of say, like, the, you know, the reason why you're attracted to this is because when you were small, this is what love looked like to you. And it's very difficult to see, you know, see the red flags when the red flags are normal for you. You know?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's what we're used to. We're used to being, you know, ignored and neglected, and then suddenly we're in a relationship and that's happening, and yeah, you think it's fine, but then suddenly you start to get beaten and mistreated, and then you know there's something wrong, but you still accept it, because again, you just think it's normal. Absolutely. Wow. So, girl, you have been through so much. So tell us about your life from, okay, so you split up with your this married man?
Yeah, I did.
And then when did you start your spiritual journey?
I would say like, what I didn't realize was my spiritual journey started off the last couple of years that I was with him. Okay. So I was being woken up at night by like having like a presence in the room and kind of like feeling as if someone was there, having things move around and things like that. It was as if something was trying to get my attention. And I was like, oh, okay. And at first I was really frightened, and these kind of experiences kept happening. And I thought, I think I'm having some kind of like spiritual awakening. But it wasn't a buzzword. Like, now everybody talks about their spiritual awakening and it's really popular and things like that. This was back in 2010.
Yeah, it wasn't as
it
big.
Wasn't, yeah. You know, it wasn't so big. I picked up a magazine, Spirit and Destiny, one day, and it was, the advert in the magazine was for psychic school. And I was like, I think I'm psychic. And I was like, okay, on a whim, I thought, I'm going to go for this. And I booked, it was down in Kent, I booked this trip to go stay for a weekend, and it would be all psychic work. It wasn't just beginners. They were looking for people who had a little bit of knowledge of the tarot and things like that, or had already been doing work. And I didn't really have that, so I didn't think it would really kind of go anywhere. But somehow I got there. It was already sold out. They squeezed me in and got down there and discovered that I could read tarot really well. And I already had like a lot of psychic insight, and that I was already kind of developing as a medium. And so that's really kind of where it started. Started off kind of doing readings for people back around about 2011, 2012. That grew on its own from there. And then a little bit later on, 2014, I met my daughter's dad, had my daughter and things like that. I feel like with every child I've had, I would say it's like having like another spiritual awakening on top of the one you've already got. It just adds so many dimensions and deeper parts of yourself that you've got to understand and explore. And I'd say, like, to this day, like, my mental health was not very good at all until round about the time that I had my daughter. Actually, just before that, I had tried to take my own life, and that was just because, like, there was another kind of sexual assault that had happened. Totally different story to the one already, but I'd basically been walking home and I had this assault happen with this man who had kind of pulled me into like a close on the way home. And basically that had triggered all this other stuff that I had kind of not really dealt with properly. And that was kind of like the kind of rock bottom that I had. Afterwards, my auntie took me to stay with her for a while, and she was like, you know, you're on all this medication for depression, and she goes, it's not working. She's like, I'm looking at you, the lights are on but nobody's home, and it's like all this medication keeps being increased, and it's like you're a zombie. Would you try transcendental meditation? So I was like, right, okay, I'll give it a go. And within a couple of weeks, I just felt so calm. Like, it sorted out the racing thoughts. It calmed down that panicky response that I had to everything. You know, that kind of underlayer that you are left with when you have PTSD. It's like you respond to everything without realizing.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's something that you've spoken about already, is, you know, the fact that the body remembers.
Yeah, it does. Like, the body remembers, and it helped me deal with that a lot more in a deeper way. And so I was able to kind of, for the first time, like, actually, you know, bring myself to a place of peace.
Wow. Yeah, absolutely. And it's amazing, isn't it, how just by doing all this spiritual work, I mean, you know, you were led to this, I believe. I believe we all are.
Yeah.
And, you know, you were led to this, and it's fantastic because you're out there now. You're helping other survivors.
Yeah.
And that's the greatest gift of all.
Definitely.
So how about now? I mean, look, this man was Russian. We've just had a lot of media coverage about Russia. Has it brought back any kind of memories or any triggers?
Not going to lie, it has.
Okay, yeah.
And I think that's just because where we are in the world, I don't really need to kind of think about Russia or Russians. There's some Russians around, like, in Scotland and things like that, but, like, They're not where I am. Yeah. So I'm not having that day-to-day interaction. But so it's not something I've had to really kind of deal with. But now, because it's like I've got an unhealthy association with Russians, and I know that I'm not saying that every Russian is a rapist or anything like that, because we know that, you know, all people that walk the earth, like there's rapists in every country,
absolutely,
every religion, every race. So, but it's more kind of been to do with hearing the language.
Yeah, it would. It's a trigger.
Is a trigger, particularly if it's like a deep male voice. There's been a couple of times, I'm not really one for watching news or anything, but because the coverage has been so widespread, it's in social media, it's
been everywhere. Fierce.
There's been a few times where I've had, I have been literally brought back, in my mind to having a flashback, and I've had to kind of center myself and say, it's okay, you know, we're here.
That's good.
Really try to orientate myself to place and time.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, so you've got really good coping skills now.
I'm lucky. I do have good coping skills, but I'm not going to lie. It has given me some triggers.
It's understandable, you know. And when it comes to PTSD, we are triggered. You know, there's flashbacks, and it can occur for the rest of your life. You know, we can manage it and we can heal from it, but the body remembers. So how about you today now? So you're helping other survivors, which is fantastic. You're a mom. Brilliant. Amazing.
I'm a parent. I do absolutely love for my kids. I enjoy being a single mother. I've been single for a long time.
Yeah.
Because my last relationship was another domestic violence relationship. And I left that relationship at 5 months pregnant.
Okay.
And decided to do all this on my own. And I've still seen men and things like that. I've still seen men, but I've not had any relationships. I've dated a couple, and it's like I feel like I'm always looking for those red flags now, whereas before, I didn't. And it's more to, like, when I say I live for my kids, I literally do, because I'll not let anyone come into what I've built. Without having some kind of trust and kind of background on them. You know, establishing a relationship takes a bit of time.
It does, a lot of investment.
Those are kind of like my parameters. Most of, if it's not kind of being a mum to the kids, you know, the business is my other baby. It is mostly kind of psychic reading, spiritual mentoring and coaching. Specifically, there has been women who I've read for who have been in similar situations to myself, sometimes pregnant with children, and you know, being able to say, get out now, because as your pregnancy continues, the domestic violence is going to get worse. You know, that was my experience of it, and it's well documented that it does increase during pregnancy. And being able to be like a support mechanism for people and really kind of understand what people are going through. So a lot of my work is around that and loving the self, like learning to really love ourselves first. So that we're not looking outside of ourselves for these relationships to fill our cup up. That has to come from within.
It really does, it really does. Oh, I love that. And so what would be your advice to my listeners? Obviously, that's fantastic advice, the fact that we have to love ourselves.
Yeah.
But is there any other words of wisdom that you'd like to share?
I would say, start small.
Okay.
Start small. It's not, sometimes we look at the healing journey as something that we've got to fix. You know, like some things were like, I need to fix myself. And it's the truth of the matter is that the healing journey is always ongoing. It's like layers. It's like, I always say it's like an onion. And it reminds me of that film Shrek, where it says like ogres are like onions. But that's really what your healing journey is like. It's like we do a bit of inner work and we remove a layer of onion and we do another bit. And, until we get to that core, you know, something, and we would get to the core issue. Sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it can happen very quickly. It depends on the person, the situation. Then you're removing, you know, layers, you know, from your physical body, from your emotional body. You know, it takes time. And smallest steps, I would say, just start with your mind first. Start with kind of putting in like the positive affirmations that you're good enough and that you're worthy. Like change the chemistry of your brain, change like the narrative first. Start there.
Oh, I love that. Thank you. And so where can my listeners find you if they wish to work with you?
I have got a YouTube channel. It's called The Empowered Empath Movement. I am in the process of doing another website at the minute. So that is called therealmofmintaka.com.
Interesting title, yeah.
Yeah, nice. I'm mostly on Facebook.
Okay,
brilliant. I'm mostly on Facebook.
Brilliant. So I will add all the links in the description box so that they can get hold of you if they have any questions. So that's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jasmine. It's been an absolute honor having you on and for you to share such a vulnerable and such an inspiring story. And again, I'm so sorry you had to go through that, but I'm so proud of how far you've come and the work that you're doing today. You know, this was the gift, I guess, from the universe. So I guess, you know, we have to be thankful for where we are today, because I know so many survivors that they struggle for the rest of their lives and, you know, it can go the other way, which, you know, people become addicts or they'll take their own life. And this is why, you know, I've got this channel, because I just want to instill some hope in survivors. So I so appreciate the journey that you've been on and who you are, you know, what you're about, Jasmine Anderson. So my listeners, please do get in touch if you have any questions. We hope you found today's talk utterly inspiring, because I sure did. And it's an honor to serve and we love you. And I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. In the meantime, stay blessed, stay empowered and keep shining your light. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Victim to Victor. Subscribe so you don't miss out on new episodes. And be sure to follow the podcast on socials to keep updated on what's next, and share Victim to Victor with family and friends to help grow the community and spread the positive healing energy.